Technorama episode 642. His name is my name too. Whoever came up with this show title, I think it's around identity theft or something. That's all I can think of. I've been doing too much programming this weekend, and I see the word name, and I'm thinking it's a variable.
Like, yeah.
This dot name. Ah! Okay. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're joining us for the first time, thank you very much. We appreciate it. In either video or audio form, you're here, and so are we, for the most part. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where the temperatures are in the triple digits in the Fahrenheit scale. We're trying to accommodate our international listeners, but sometimes we revert. Just across there on the digital table is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great in the dark state of South Carolina.
Is it dark 30 already?
It is.
Okay.
Well, hey, by the way, it's a programming conundrum. And you'll understand why when I tell you this.
Okay.
So I was driving in the car and I was, you know, kind of a little tired. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to play. I asked Google Assistant to play a game and I can just talk to it, you know, through the Android Auto. So it gave me some options and it said, who wants to be a millionaire? I said, okay, I'll play that. So it started asking me questions and I was doing pretty good. And I got to one. And I forget the exact question, but one of the answers had A, B, C. It was about punctuation, A, B, C. And then C was the answer. It was supposed to be C, comma, you know, the word comma.
Yeah.
Well, when I spoke to Google, I said C, comma. It put S-E-E literally and a comma. I'm sorry. I didn't understand your response. Try it again. I said, the letter C. And it said the letter C. Of course, that's the wrong answer. You know, I guess it's got to be C and comma. Yeah, a stupid thing. It finally says, I see we're having trouble getting your answer. So come back, play later. And it just went away. I was like, dang.
The letter C / comma.
I was getting frustrated.
You have to escape the special characters.
I know. I even said the word comma, hoping it would just pick it up, but no.
Oh, my. Hey, Danny Mortensen, good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Danny's out there. And just going to do a real quick check, see if anybody is. No comments on YouTube yet, so whoever's out there watching with us. Then again, one viewer could be me. I don't know. I'm just monitoring things here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We have some. Oh, did we post our question of the week in social media?
Yeah, but it was like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. I had a bit of a messy weekend, so I did not get around to checking that and getting to
that. In all fairness, it posted a week earlier we took that weekend off.
It's been out there so long. It's like a banana. It's turned brown and rotten, and you don't even want to make banana bread out of this question anymore.
Well, I don't want to say it. There you go. Question of the week. Which video game have you accumulated the most hours in?
And we gave our answers at the end of the last show.
Yeah. So here's, I got five comments. Let me pull them up.
Okay, good. Good.
So Gary Lindros, old school Galaga, middle time school, Sonic the Hedgehog, and current time school, Fallout 4.
Little bit of a difference between those games.
Yeah, just a little bit. Let's see. John Miller Jr. Many of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Games for the Game Boy Advance and Nintendo DS from Yu-Gi-Oh! Yu-Gi-Oh! GX and Yu-Gi-Oh! 5DS ate up a ton of my time. I tried to continue on with the Sony PSP titles, but the PSP was expensive and clunky to use. I still play the card game, Yu-Gi-Oh! So actually, I liked the PSP. It was a cool device, but yeah, it had its issues. Our buddy, Steve London, he says it will be a tight race between Counter-Strike and Monkey Island series and Minecraft.
Monkey Island. Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, he says, but he guesses Minecraft. John Kratzer says, chuckle.
Never heard of it. Sounds fun.
He got a seven digit score, or whatever. I'm not sure of that one myself. I have to go look that one up. And Mike Robeson says Diablo 2, Diablo 2 Easter Sun, Final Fantasy 4 or 5. Does Solitaire count? I think Solitaire does count.
Solitaire counts. Did we say video games? Which video game? Yeah, Solitaire would count.
Yeah, why not?
Because I was thinking about extending that into card games or board games or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this. I remember my frustration with games that you would play and you get to a certain point and die, and it would take you all the way back to that chapter of the game.
Before the days of saves.
I tell you, the game Commando, and it was on the Commodore. And I remember playing it, and I kept getting to a certain point, and I had to die, and I restart. I remember hitting the desk with my fist.
Was it resetting you all the way? Was it resetting you back to the beginning of the game or just the beginning of that level?
Beginning of that level.
Okay, because a lot of the original ones were resetting you back to the beginning of the game. When you put in an hour on this game and go, oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah. But it was like it should have been a save point or something, you know, it was that far. That's what I was getting at. And so in that chapter, and then we go and go all the way back. I'm like,
we used to play.
I'm still frustrated about it.
The old Castle Wolfenstein and the Apple IIs. And before we'd even enter a new room, we would save. Because when you get up to some of those higher levels, it would reset you back. You wouldn't lose rank, but you'd have to start. I was like, oh, man, that was annoying. Yeah. But you could save before you entered a room because you didn't know what was in there. Somebody was right there at the entrance ready to shoot you. Anyway, a lot of fun.
Well, the Commando one wasn't like that, per se. It was more like an arcade style.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no really, you know. If it's saving you anything, it's doing it on its own. You just couldn't save by yourself. Anyway.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, but a few years ago, didn't I bring the Mad Magazine game to Dragon Con, the board game?
I think you did.
You remember a long time ago. Yeah, where the objective of the game is to lose all your money.
Wait, guess what?
It's like reverse.
That's the game of life, I think.
No, I hope not. Otherwise, I'm losing really badly. But yeah. I was listening to Gates McFadden's podcast, Who Do You Think You Are? And she's going through and interviewing a lot of the Star Trek family. She's talked to LeVar Burton. She's talked to, she had a two-parter with Will Wheaton. And it came up that his favorite board game is the Mad Magazine game. And I went, oh my gosh. It's such an obscure game that not many people know about it. And I have a copy. It's in pretty rough shape, but I have a copy. And I said, dude.
In all fairness, he did a show about board games.
Yep. Table Talk.
Yep, that's right.
I
enjoyed that show, by the way.
I caught a few episodes of it, but I sent him a message on Twitter. It was a public message, and I said, hey, just listen to you and Gates about your board game. I said, if you're on the next Star Trek cruise, I'm packing this thing and game on.
Oh boy.
I don't know if he's, I haven't seen on the itinerary if he's coming next year or not, but, that would be like kind of a nerdgasm if you could sit down and play a board game with Will Wheaton, especially one that he loves, where he's admittedly loving the game.
Yeah.
So, and we'd have to get some other people on that too, because it's only fun with about four people because, yeah, every once in a while you have to get up and shift positions and like, everybody move one chair to the right. It's like, hey, I was losing here.
God.
Or trade money with the person to your left.
You need to bring that to Dragon Con. We got to play that again.
I will do that. It is in very, very tender shape. Like the box is the kind where at least three of the corners are split open.
You need one of those secure cases that has like handcuffs, you know, carry it.
Put into Halliburton with the cutout foam and all
you need to put it in one of those Pelican cases so it's secure.
The original game pieces are pretty much gone. We have things like a Bud Light cap, a piece from Sorry. It's a hodgepodge of pieces, but that's
I can bring you a bourbon cork and you can use one of those.
All we have to do is at Dragon Con, we have to find somebody who's cosplaying Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine, because It says right in there, if your name is Alfred E. Newman, you inherit $1,376,076.23. And there's one bill in the bank that has that exact amount on it. So you would definitely not be the winner by losing. Okay, we have, well, dance around that topic for a long time. That was a lot of fun. We'll have another question.
That's what the show's about, man.
At the end of the game. I mean, well, at the end of the game. We'll have another question for you at the end of the show.
Right.
Take a week off and my brain is just gone. Gone. Yeah. We are recording. Yes, the recording is going. The stream is going. I have to make sure of these things. Convince myself every once in a while. And we are on to the history. Oh, boy. Oh, I was a little early on that one. On this day in history for June 9th, 2021. How did we get this far into the year already?
It's Christmas before we know it.
160 days have gone by already. This is craziness. Short one for you this time, people. The music will probably make it. It was on this date in 1534 that Jacques Cartier was the first European to describe and map the St. Lawrence River. How do you describe the river?
Well, it's mostly water.
It's wet.
And it's going that way.
All right. On June 9th, 1928, Charles Kingsford Smith completed the first trans-Pacific flight in a Fokker trimotor monoplane, the Southern Cross.
You just, you know, you'd hear about Charles Lindbergh, but nobody ever comes up with, oh, Charles Kingsford Smith.
Hey, I can see it now. He's bringing somebody to show him the plane. Look, meet the Fokker.
careful. The USS George Washington was launched on this date in 1959. It happened to be the first nuclear-powered ballistic missile submarine. Happy birthday also goes out on this date too. German astronomer and academic Johann Gottfried Galle, born on this date in 1812.
And Pierre Duhem, the French physicist and mathematician and historian, was born 160 years ago today. Sure, he's celebrating it.
How did I end up with the Russian-German chemist?
I don't know.
I thought I had one in here for you. All right, I'll take it. June 9th, 1861, Russian-German chemist and physicist Gustav Heinrich Johann Apollon Tammann. That's five names.
Oh, man, this is going to be a tough one right here. Cole Porter, American composer and songwriter, was born on that same date in 1891.
American guitarist and songwriter Les Paul. Yes, that Les Paul that made the guitars was born today in 1915.
Also born on that same date in 1937, German hydrobiologist and academic Harald Rosenthal.
Harald.
I was trying to say the Harald.
American actor Johnny Depp was born today in 1963. He's 58.
Yeah. And also born on that same date in 1981, Israeli-American actress Natalie Portman.
Can you dig it? When was Force Awakens out? No, she was on that, right? Yeah, she was on Force Awakens and the second one of that movie.
Natalie Portman? Yeah. No. What? No, she was on The Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace.
Yeah, Phantom Menace and, all, you know, those three movies.
Oh, yeah, I was in the wrong trilogy. That's what I meant. The ones that came out in early 2000. Helps if you release them in order there, George.
No kidding.
So, what, that was 2000, 2001?
2000.
She was, like, 19.
Or is it? No, I'm sorry. Was it 1999?
It was somewhere in there. Yeah, she was a young lady back then. Not anymore. She's now 40. Natalie Portman's 40.
Yeah, 99.
Okay, we're all getting older as this podcast goes by, so let's wrap it up.
Speak for yourself.
Listener birthdays today include Tim from Australia on June 10th. Also June 10th is Weber. By the way, June 10th, AA was founded in 1935. Why didn't we put that on? Because we did this for June 9th. The 15th is Miss Eliza C. from Winging It 3D. We have old podcast hosts putting their name on our birthday calendar now. How about that? Somewhere I have a Winging It 3D bottle opener still. Let's see if that still works.
You know what? They kind of suck, but I still kept mine.
They break easy. So when I moved into the house and Michael gave me one more, I said, I'm never using this. It's like never removed from box kind of thing.
I think I used it for about three or four times. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to put this in the drawer. Just leave it. Because sometimes the cap would go.
And sometimes the opener would break. Well, anyway, that's the way it was on this day in history. Bottle openers and all for June 9th, 2021. And you know what? If you want to be on the birthday calendar, you can do so by going over to... I still have the pre-show thing up there. Still so much attention I'm not paying to this show. Let's go over to the birthday calendar caption. There we go. Birthday calendar is chuckchat.com/wiki. One of these days, I'm going to make new titles for this show. If I could ever stop making new titles for other shows.
Yeah.
We'll get this going. Thank you very much, everybody. And we will talk to you about birthdays on the next episode. Let's fade out the music. Bye! Womp. Okay. One-man show running all the audio on this end. That means we've got some news?
Good startling news.
Good news, everyone!
Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, you go ahead, take the first story.
All right, so I thought this was funny. It just sounded funny, at least. NASA to kick off Squid Uprising with latest SpaceX payload to the ISS.
They're not exactly squids. Those are cuttlefish.
Well, here, let's read on. So the 22nd SpaceX cargo resupply mission is going to be delivered to the International Space Station this month. And among the materials for the various experiments NASA is working on, there will be 128 baby bobtail squid that are just the cutest little babies ever.
Okay, yeah, they look cute. A lot like cuttlefish. Oh, maybe it's because they're babies. They're all cephalopods, octopi.
Well, they're bobtailed, so they don't have, anyway. So,
bells on bobtail squid, making spirits.
Sorry, you messed me up.
That's
right,
my job.
So, where was I at? Okay, I mean, just look at them. They're babies. Anyway, they've got polka dots and big eyes and tiny little legs. This may be the cutest way humanity comes to an end. Oh, what? No, I'm reading this verbatim, by the way. You thought this experiment would simply result in data on the development of animal tissues in space? Well, I got news for you, Buster. Sending cephalopods to space is basically fast-tracking your downfall as a dominant species on this planet.
Rutherford Zoidberg.
Yes. Actually, that's what I was thinking of.
He's not a cephalopod.
No, he's more like a lobster-ish kind of thing. Anyway, UMAMI.
Isn't that something you order with your sushi? I'd like to order the umami. What about my mommy?
So UMAMI examines the effects of spaceflight on the molecular. I need more water. Molecular.
Spaceflight on the molecular and chemical interactions between the beneficial microbes and their animal hosts. Microbes play a significant role in the normal development of animal tissues and in maintaining human health. Quote, animals, including humans, rely on our microbes to maintain a healthy digestive and immune system. That's right, people. There's as much alien DNA in your gut as there is human DNA because all those microbes are not you. So... we do not fully understand how spaceflight alters these beneficial interactions. The UMAMI experiment uses a glow-in-the-dark bobtail squid to address these important issues in animal health. The bobtail squid, Eupaimna scolopes, is the ancient model that is used to study symbiotic relationships between two species. This investigation helps determine whether spaceflight alters the mutually beneficial relationship, which could support development of protective measures and mitigations to preserve astronaut health on long-duration space missions. The work also could lead to a better understanding of the complex interactions between animals and beneficial microbes, including new and novel pathways that microbes use to communicate with animal tissues. Such knowledge could help identify ways to protect and enhance these relationships for better human health and well-being on Earth as well. Ooh, very cool. Go, little squids. Help us understand how we can live longer and
fly,
better in space.
Fly, be free.
You can just see them like in zero gravity going like this and not getting anywhere. They're doing the little tails are just going, not going anywhere.
That's right.
Oh, you know, cool. It'd be fun. Take one of those and put it in a drop of water as it floats through microgravity and watch them just kind of swim in circles. Would they swim out of the bubble?
I would hope not. They might. Well, I don't know. No, maybe not because of the surface tension. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
So that reminds me of the Hyundai commercials that have been out lately. They're asking all these rhetorical questions like, shouldn't the word ambiguous have more than one meaning? Are eyebrows considered facial hair? They're really creative on some of these. I don't know if they're getting them off of some internet list or if the ad agency made them up, but they are really good questions. Like, oh, yeah, that makes you go, All right. That is it for the news. We are on to the Hacks and Strange Stories, which is this one. It's the red button over here. It's always been the red button.
All right, I'll take this one then, since you took over.
We're tag teaming.
Doesn't matter.
How scientists
ready?
In a potato field found the field of radio astronomy.
Yeah, so the first transatlantic phone call was made in 1927, more than two decades before ships laid their first cables connecting North America and Europe. Unlike domestic telephone operations at the time, which connected people by electric cable.
Hey, wait a minute. There's a thing that says, listen to this article. We don't have to read at all anymore.
Oh, good.
This podcast can pretty much do itself.
All right. I'll just sit down and.
All right. It's playing out the system, the external speaker. Let me change that audio output device there. And I want to see if it sounds any better or worse than us.
A phone call was made in 1927, more than two decades before ships laid the first cables connecting North America and Europe.
Unlike domestic telephone operations at the time, which connected people by electric cable, early transatlantic telecommunications were carried by radio waves. Static frequently interfered with these long-distance phone calls. It was the static that led a
young radio engineer named Carl Guthyansky on a chase that ended with the advent of a new era of astronomy.
They even got the pronunciation right.
The same year of that first radio phone call connecting the U.S. and the U.K., Yansky graduated from the University of Wisconsin, where he studied physics. Bell Telephone Laboratories, a telecommunications company based in New Jersey, wanted to research atmospheric properties and their effect.
We should just get this guy to read all our stories. We'll just hang out.
They hired Yansky as a radio engineer the following year to figure out where static and
we'll be like Statler and Waldorf. We'll just comment on everything.
During his few years at
Bell
Labs,
wasn't static.
Yansky turned.
That was me. All right. So anyway, I thought that would be kind of entertaining, but the
you were wrong.
I was trying to determine whether that was like computer generated or a real person reading it.
I don't know.
It sounded very stiff, like a computer generated, but
yeah,
computers aren't going to understand that Carl Guthyansky is the pronunciation of that. I mean, a computer would have said Jansky.
Yeah. Jansky.
That's a unit of measure. If you remember right. Way back when we did all the different units of the smooth.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Oh, it's funny you bring that up. Just the other day, Harrison was talking about the units of measurement, and the whole thing went through my head. I started thinking we're talking about hands and all that. And then when we got into what do you call a bunch of geeks and you know, a bunch of this or
a podcast. He was talking about a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Was it he was talking about one. I can't remember. It was what do you call a group of crows. But ravens were not a conspiracy, but it was something weird. I'm like, who makes up these?
Here, we should play that just for the fun of it. Strange units of measure.
Oh, you got this. Is very bizarre.
Go is 180 millimeters. A pack year is a cigarette consumption based on one pack a day for a year.
Oh, for crying out loud.
A nibble, typically 4 bits of binary code or half a byte.
Now, I knew that one.
Score, that's 20 of something. A hand, 4 inches of horse height.
Now, wait a minute. So you measure a horse in hands. Do you measure a donkey in butt?
No, a donkey is an ass. A TWIP is 1/20th of a typesetting point.
Wow, I didn't know that one.
This is TWIP, this week in podcasting. Don't forget about a thrave, which is 24 sheaves of wheat.
Bring in the sheaves, bring in the sheaves.
A shake is 10 nanoseconds.
Yeah, that's It's like when you're going to detox.
Look, they're shaking at this certain 10 nanosecond frequency.
Yeah. Whatever.
A Mickey is a ratio of computer mouse movements to on-screen cursor movement.
Knew that one.
A Jansky is a strength of radio signals from space.
A long time ago.
A butt is two hogs' heads or about 126 gallons of boo.
I didn't know that one either.
And smoot is a measure of length developed by some MIT students equal to 5 feet 7 inches, the height of Oliver R. Smoot.
It'll be over in just a moment.
See? It was kind of crazy that I had the same snappy comebacks as I did. What was that, like 15 years ago?
Yeah. So what do you call a bunch of what do you call a bunch of geeks together?
A podcast.
No, an array.
An array. A network.
Yeah. Or a set of nerds. Anyway, I just pulled that up. Anyway, yeah, that was funny.
Wow.
By the way,
we went off the rails again.
A group of ravens are an unkindness.
Yes. I'll say they are.
I don't know. Anyway.
Some Royal Historic Society had to have something to do one day. Oh, what should we call a group of ravens?
An unkindness, I say.
I vote for a cluster.
A cluster. By the way, this guy went to a potato farm and he heard some static. And anyway, it's kind of where he realized that this machinery was putting off radio waves, and that's where everything started. All right, let's move on.
He turned an abandoned potato farm into an experimental station to hunt down the source of radio frequency interference. As part of the experiment, he constructed a special antenna, more than twice as long as a city bus back in the 20s, of course. The antenna rotated on a set of Ford Model T tires.
Hey, it looks like something the Oral brothers put together.
Oh, yeah. This is an interesting picture in here. It looks like a half-constructed barn on a turntable of sorts.
Yeah.
And there you have it. Jansky standing with the antenna. This is probably the Jansky that oscillation is named after.
Right, of course, it would be. I mean, radio frequencies, sure.
Although, this guy said Jansky. Now we have to find out. Maybe we said it wrong.
The plot thickens.
We'll have to go back and re-record that old 2007 clip.
Right.
All right, we have a chat room. We have some... We got a big old nerd.
I just saw an angry face fly up. What did we do?
Pay no attention to that angry face.
Yeah.
They're still watching. Are they? Why would you watch something that you're angry with? Just stop watching it.
Wait. No, don't ask that question.
That's called C-SPAN.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. All right. Chat room. We've got, we can only tell you who's reported in. So if you haven't, too bad. I see Danny Mortensen and John Miller Jr. and whoever's watching on YouTube, which could be me. I don't know. Thank you, everybody, for chiming in. We are around on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern on Facebook and YouTube. So search for Technorama Podcast and we will be there for you, which must mean it's time for the orange button. And that means it's time for the reading of the patrons. Thank you, because you guys have got us through another month of bills, and there are more coming.
Thank you.
Next year is the big one with the domain registrations.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But the hosting is paid for. The Auphonic is paid for. The software upgrades are paid for. We're doing all right. So, in large part to Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad and Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dan D. Mancoyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, and Jorga Schrauen. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Christina and Kyle and Leon, Mark, Mike, Chris, Saturday, Steve. That just sounds really funny. You know, if it's Saturday Morning Media, why doesn't he have any podcasts that come out on Saturday morning? I just don't understand it.
We ask the hard questions.
There's that Hyundai commercial again. Why doesn't Saturday Morning Media release podcasts on Saturday? Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. Thank you, everybody. And in return, we not only share our undying appreciation on each episode, but we also record a special episode just for them, where Craig and I just sit back and you can envision us smoking a cigar and drinking a brandy snifter of something and really having some in-depth thoughts about what to name a group of ravens. Oh, I just saw the video give a little herky-jerky, but that's all right.
Yeah. By the way, Tim Celine is in the chat room. He popped in. He says he's sleepless in Germany.
Oh, my goodness. I hope you're up early rather than up late.
Yes, right. That's right.
Wait, 4:15 in Germany? Yeah, that would make sense. 8 to 9 hours ahead of us?
Well, I hope it makes sense. He told you. What?
Well, he could have written that like 2 days ago, too.
Yeah, it just popped in. Yeah.
You know how text messages kind of get hung out there in the ether? Like, where was that email for the last two years? Okay, so let's fade out the Imperial March Band. Dun, 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 dun. And, wow, Craig, we are like getting down to mere weeks before Dragon Con. Isn't that crazy?
I haven't had to think of this
for a really long time, and now it's like, do I have everything in my cosplay bucket? Is it still viable? Does the glue still work?
I have a little work to do on Robot Santa because I'm in possession of Robot Santa. So.
Oh, I forgot to mention.
Scott.
The Patreon button. Patreon button. There we are. If you want to be part of the Patreon crowd, we would greatly appreciate it. We'll read your name on the show and we'll get you that free episode. Bonus episode, I should say, every time. And if we don't produce, you don't pay. I think we did two shows in May. So it was.
Yeah, we took a Memorial Day off
and
it was another weekend.
Yeah. Yep. And it all worked out. So the URL is on the screen for people that are watching, but for your listening pleasure, it's patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Just how it sounds. No special upside down letters or numbers or missing vowels or something. It makes sense. We tried our best to spell it this time. Okay. What's up next? Hand me the remote.
Yeah, me the remote. Yeah,
that's what the music is telling us. Hand me the remote.
Thank you.
What is this thing?
What'd you give it's amazing. Me?
It's the stand for my Stream Deck. I watched on Hulu. I'm watching a lot of things, and I still have a good backlog of shows to put in here, but. This past week, I watched The Beatles 8 days a week, The Touring Years, and very good documentary put together by Ron Howard. It goes through sort of their mentality. They didn't really have much of a recording contract. They were not making millions of dollars out of things like I Want to Hold Your Hand or Please Please Me. It was not all that good. And in order to make money, they had to tour. They made their money from the concerts. And the venues kept going up. I mean, there were times when they were paying 5,000 people, then 8,000 people, then 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. And they had some wonderful photos, like in studio, the tour.
You said they were paying 10,000 people?
No. They were playing to 10,000 people.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
And I think the biggest one they had was like Shea Stadium was one of the last concerts they did. Candlestick Park was one of the last ones they did. But after a while, they just kind of went through the motions. I think Shea was like 53,000 people. But they were just kind of going through the motions. They said when they played Candlestick, it was so loud. Ringo couldn't even, they didn't have any monitors. They didn't have any earpieces back then. But yet they were still in time. They were such great musicians. Ringo said, I was just watching Paul and John's ass to know where we were in the song.
Well, to be honest with you, they played those songs so much.
Yeah.
You could probably pretty much know what was going on just by body language alone. So.
Right. And you just, because they've gone through the motions, through the routines, they're not doing any improv during the performance, but that was a brutal existence for them for a long time. And then after they just said, all right, we're kind of done making tours. And then it kind of tapered off about the time Sgt. Pepper's came out, which was really a big turning point in their career.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know a lot of artists probably get tired of having to play the same song over and over and over and over and over to all the different venues. So I can imagine because, yeah, and they played them for a long time. So,
Well, he'd be really good at it. That's the one thing I like about karaoke is I get to pick my own five songs every week.
Like, right. You don't have three others looking at you trying to figure out what you can play.
Like, good night, Hamburg. We love you.
Yeah.
Not playing the same five songs tomorrow night in a different city. But then again, I'm not making a ton of money and going out on the road like they are either. So yeah. To each is their own career. But it was a very informative, very well put together. Ron Howard, I think I mentioned that. Ron Howard was the director of this. Great documentary. Mm-hmm. If you want to see the insights, they also had some guest appearances by notable people you might recognize, whether they were politicians or stars. Whoopi Goldberg was at some of the early concerts, and she tells her story about how she didn't have any money and her mom surprised her with tickets.
She saw the Beatles in person?
Yeah.
Okay. Just never really thought about that. Okay.
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver was in there. She's like 70 now. Unbelievable. Yeah. But they have a picture of the crowd. Like, it was a close up of maybe six or seven people in the frame of this shot, and they're Sigourney Weaver, a very young Sigourney Weaver.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It was unbelievable. Like, where? I mean, somebody must have sent it to her and gone, you know, maybe after she was famous, go, look what I found in my collection. It's you at a conference or at a concert.
I love the Beatles. I'm about to go watch this.
Yeah. There were a couple songs in there. I mean, I think Paul said he and John wrote over 300 songs. Now, they did a little comparison, and they said, I think it was Franz Schubert wrote a whole bunch, like way up there. Mozart wrote a whole bunch. And John and Paul are up there with like very, very prolific songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very entertaining.
Yeah.
What do you got?
So, all right. So I watched Woman in Motion, which is about Nichelle Nichols and her participation with NASA in recruiting for the space shuttle program. Of course, they talk about her obvious, They talk about her early career with her dancing and singing and on into Star Trek. And then, of course, her going into working with NASA. And there was a lot of that. Well, some of that I knew, but there was a lot of that filled in the blanks for me. And I didn't realize how deep her work with NASA was.
Oh yeah.
I mean, when I say that, I mean how far she went to, you know, we didn't have the internet. You can't just make a video and a million people see it. You have to go to these regions and get on the radio, get on the TV and have these conversations with the people. And she did the notebook that she put together for the final report, you know, for NASA, I guess for budgeting and all that, you know, as part of their thing. It was a huge section of just her, the interview she did, you know, talking about it. But I think it was incredible the effect that she had on everybody, because not only just for African Americans, but for women and men and of different races and everybody trying to get them in. And what really sold it for me was the statistic, and it's not really a spoiler because you can see this stuff anywhere, but the statistic of what they had 4 months before they were ending the shuttle recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
So she had time. She went through the astronaut training.
Cool.
So she knew how to sell it. And when she said she wanted to do that, they were like, what? She wants to do what? The reason was she wanted to actually experience what people are going to be doing. How can I sell this to somebody if I don't know? So she went through that. Then she went and sold to everybody. And the statistic of how many people registered for the program before she got involved and after was astonishing. It was like 8,000 people as opposed to had like 1,000 applicants or so. Don't quote me on those exact numbers, but it's something like that. It was like 8,000 something people. It was ridiculous. And they even had such a big response from all of the applicants. They expanded the field from 25 people that would be selected to 36, mm-hmm. I think it was. So that, you know, more people got in there. And a lot of people that saw the effect firsthand, you hear them talk. And of course, some people that talked for those that weren't there that, Julie, I'm spacing her last name. She died in Challenger. They're talking about her and, of course, all the effect. Anyway, it was fantastic to see the testimonies from people about her impact on NASA.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch that. Woman in Motion on Paramount Plus.
That's right.
Excellent. Okay, and then I think we're off to the media corner. So grab your jacket. Let's go. Wait, jacket? It's the middle of summer.
Welcome to Blockhead.
100 and something out there today.
Some good information about music and TV and videos and things. Over here in the media corner.
And being redirected. Three lost Charles Schulz strips have been rediscovered. Do they show adult Lucy Van Pelt? Is that what we're after?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, good. Okay. To some, they resemble Peanuts characters if Charlie Brown and the gang had ever grown up. Oh my gosh. Kind of does look like Linus's haircut and Lucy's haircut. Wow.
It's like Charlie Brown.
Yeah. That's what the Peanuts characters are, Craig.
You said Linus.
The hair on this guy looks like Linus.
Yeah.
Charlie Brown one
Charlie
curl
Brown
in the front.
Bald. Yeah. You're right.
So this middle-aged woman says, Hagemeyer, go over to the warehouse and pick up 3 new typewriters. Tells you what era this is from. Yes, Miss Hamhock. And then she says, huh, he didn't take a requisition slip. That man gets more stupid every day. The third panel says, Hagemeyer, didn't you forget something? Oh, I'm sorry. And he salutes her.
That's right.
These rare curiosities intrigue and baffle even the experts. They're a puzzle to me, says Jean Schulz, wife of the late cartoonist Charles M. Schulz, who drew them. There are the 7 black and white works of comic art from the mid-1950s, collectively called the Hagemeyer strips. 4 of them have appeared in books. The other lost strips were found and purchased in auction in May 2020, but have never been widely published, according to the Charles M. Schulz Museum and Research Center. The 7 Hagemeyer originals will go on public display for the first time June 17th at the Museum's Gallery Space in Santa Rosa, California, as the centerpiece of an exhibition titled Adults by Schulz.
They should have put a Z on the adults.
Yeah, that would have been funny. And some viewers will inevitably try to draw comparisons to Peanuts. Yet, unlike Schulz's famous creation, which never pictured its adult figures, the Hagemeyer samples show only adults. The characters include a meek office worker named Elmer Hagemeyer and a shouting boss named Miss Hamhock, who throws haymakers with the familiar wham of Lucy Van Pelt in the Peanuts. The 7 samples were created several years after the 1950 debut of the Peanuts. The museum believes Schulz pitched Hagemeyer as a potential feature to his distributor, United Feature Syndicate, which apparently passed on launching it.
Okay.
Schulz started several comic features during the decade, including the sports and games panel, It's Only a Game, and a religiously themed gag panel, Young Pillars, which centered on adolescence. After the museum acquired the 3 rediscovered Hagemeyer originals last year, the seller remains anonymous. Schulz officials were able to glean a bit more about the strip's concept, including who the title character was. The museum now owns all 7 pen and inked works, each about 29 by 7 inches, which still show the cartoonist's underlying pencil lines. Oh, that's freaking awesome.
Well, what's funny is it says Peanuts, but you can tell it looks like it was crossed out and Hagemeyer
was
written above it. I had to right click and open the image in a new tab so you can zoom in. But yeah, you can see where it says Hagemeyer and it's scratched out.
So 7 by 29. Yeah, that's about the size that Dan used to do. I got a buddy who's a professional artist and he used to do comic strips, like a weekly thing or a biweekly thing for our local newspaper. And he often had those larger formats. Like, why you got to draw it so big, man? Because they reduce it down to put it in the newspaper.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, I remember watching him work on those several times. It's like, That's a grind, man, to come up with a new catchy thing every week in a four-panel format. That is tough.
Yeah.
That is tough. All righty.
Agreed.
So that is fun. That is fun. I wonder how much the seller got.
Oh, I have no idea, yeah.
All right. Well, if we're ever in the area, we'll have to look up that museum. That looks very fascinating. A couple things in the Geek Library before we go?
Yep.
What do you got for number one? Oh, we should Wait, we have to play the theme.
Da-da-da-da-da.
No, that's the history theme.
Oh, sorry, wrong one.
This one's... Oh. Does it show Charlie Brown's revenge on Lucy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got like a concrete football, so when she tries to pull it away, she rips a muscle. Ah!
It's anchored to the ground.
Yeah, spiked in. It's like, I'm just going to run up to it as fast as I can and then stop.
Right. I thought this article was an interesting read. I have one of the most advanced prosthetic arms in the world, and I hate it.
Well, who said this? Sounds like Marvin the Robot. I have one of the most advanced prosthetic arms in the world, yeah. and I hate it.
Yeah,
brain the size of a planet.
So this article is a little long, but I'm gonna start off here. It said, while shopping online, lately I have been thinking about getting a new arm with a profusion of lower cost and 3D printed prosthetic arms on the market, I've been hoping to finally find one that fits well.
Mm-hmm.
While online shopping, I land on the site of one of the dozens of new high-tech prosthetic arm companies and pull up some of their videos to get a closer look at the socket designs. Instead, I get yet another example of what I call prosthetic unboxing videos. That's interesting. So popular on TikTok and local news stations alike. So these videos are cliche now, young kids with missing limbs, wiggling with joy as they unbox and put on the new arm for the first time. In 2015, Robert Downey Jr. himself presented us a 7-year-old boy, a 3D printed Iron Man styled prosthetic arm.
Didn't we cover that story?
Back in the day, I was kind of cool to see. Let's see. So he says these videos never show prosthesis users doing two-handed tasks. Instead, they do things most of them would only ever undertake with their fleshy hand, like write or drink water. These videos, for the most part, exist to emotionally move the non-disabled viewer. That's what we in the community call disability porn. Don't get me wrong, I've been psyched about a new arm too, but the media's coverage of these new kids and prosthetics are so focused on the initial joy and grudgeality. I'm sorry, I get really dry mouth tonight. On the idea that that lives are changed, they forget to ask these hands are actually useful. Ask if these hands are actually useful, and that happens in the weeks and months after the unboxing. So anyway, I'm gonna skip down. You can see a picture, a little video of an example of this, where the lady's trying to cut a cake. Mm-hmm. And she's having to still push the blade down with the other hand. It doesn't quite hold the knife. She's holding it in the robotic arm, which hope it doesn't start spinning or something like that. But she goes to cut the cake and she has to push down the blade because she didn't have enough downward force, you know, with the wrist. Yeah,
it kind of defeats the point.
Yeah. Anyway, go read the article and it gives you a good understanding of what kind of issues that people looking for prosthetics are having. You know, mm-hmm. Here's somebody trying to pet their cat, you know. Anyway, so go on and check it out. It's an interesting perspective.
All right. No, good points, all of them. Oop, hold on. I'm supposed to stop that one. I'm supposed to close that window. Whew, almost lost Wirecast there for a second. Other story, a scientist tried cooking a hot dog with 20,000 volt capacitor bank, end up obliterating the hot dog to pieces. Well, we haven't heard our story from, I didn't even know dig.com was even still a thing, but here we are.
It still is. I just saw this video and I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought
it's a video.
I thought our people could enjoy it.
How long is the video?
12 minutes.
12 minutes? Oh, we're not just sitting here for
how long does it take to actually, you know, jolt some hot dogs?
No kidding. They're milking this for all it's worth. Get to the good part. Here we go. And unmute. Play.
Get a close-up of the GoPro.
It's just covered, dude, covered in meat.
I just missed it.
I got hit by a hot dog.
Charge.
There's a baby. Oh, it's a doll.
Wait.
Come on. Skip
like
ahead.
It burned off all of the plastic.
But not. It's like tension in the vinyl.
Here we go. Hot dogs. Four hot dogs held up by a stick.
All right, we're at 15,000 volts.
That's plenty of volts, Kevin.
15,000?
You yes, can do it. We're probably so going to get arrested for copyright on our YouTube video. You not can't YouTube this, something that's already
all
on
right,
YouTube.
We're live, guys.
Okay, go. Three, two, one.
Right, so I guess you're
fire in the hole. Quiet.
100. Okay. 99.
No, don't count down that far. Skip ahead a bit.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got hot dog.
That didn't cook the hot dog.
It was raining.
You've got your...
Okay, there's hot dog on the camera, man. There's... It's like when a brain explodes, kind of.
What did they think was going to happen?
It just went kabang.
Yeah.
Well... Normally, when you cook it with a battery, it just kind of sizzles and heats up and makes that funny smell.
Right.
So there we get to the highlights. It goes bang. Spoiler alert. Saved you 12 minutes of your life.
Yeah.
Wait. But you wasted it on 50 minutes of Technorama.
Yeah, well, there's that.
So let's get you out of here with the question of the week. This time, what is something free from the internet which everyone should take advantage of? Ooh.
I got a big one, and I can tell you right now.
Is LinkedIn Learning free?
No. No, they might have some free on there. I don't know.
What's your free thing?
Archive.org.
Technorama podcast.
Yeah, Technorama. Oh, missed opportunity there. No, archive.org. They got everything from old magazines to old music, books. They got all kinds of stuff.
I'm looking at old websites. Like, what did Amazon look like in 2001?
Oh, I know.
Like, ugh.
I pulled up some old websites that I had something to do with, and I'm like, oof.
The flaming logo things? Yeah.
No, the little construction GIF.
I remember one of, yeah. Why was it that the shovel always looked like it was kind of bent backwards into this little hill? It never looked like a shovel.
It looked like a triangle on a stick.
The other one that I remember was one of the first ones we did for our old company. It featured a picture of the headquarters. That was very common back then, like right. in the late 90s. Like, this is our company. Isn't it an impressive building?
Yeah.
You want to come work for us.
Yeah. I mean, there's everything from old software, arcade games. They got a whole emulator in the browser. You can play.
Really?
Any of those games? Yeah. Podcast. Actually, you know, I whenever we do Dog Days of Podcasting and I post an episode of my podcast, I've been posting them on archive.org.
Hey,
that's where they play from.
I wonder if Missile Command would be easier with a trackpad than a trackball.
I think it might.
I'll have to go figure that out. There's our homework for the week.
Yeah.
Besides watching Star Trek Beyond for the topic is Trek by Thursday. And oh my, it's going to be a short week.
I've seen it a million times. But I'll watch it again.
Thank you, Montgomery Scotty.
That's right.
Okay. So if you,
one of the best parts of that.
That was a shameless plug for our other podcast, The Topic is Trek, over at thetopicistrek.com. And everybody who listens laughs.
See, we're trying to do like Pavlov's dog, and every time you hear the bell, you just go to topicistrek.com and listen to an episode. Go.
Even if it's on somebody else's podcast, you're at the front desk of a hotel. Ding! Where's the podcast? Where's the podcast? Where's the podcast?
Pull your phone out and start.
No, every time you hear the bell, you just go .com.
Yeah.
that's right. A programmed reaction.
That's right. Why am I salivating when I'm listening to this podcast?
No, I'm not even going to go there.
No. Okay, let's move along.
Okay, we are moving along right out to the end of the show. So that takes us to the end. Let's play the outro music and get the blankety blank out of here. Thank you for joining us. If you want to find out more, you can certainly leave us feedback. I think we have some contact information here on the screen.
Only if it's positive.
No. What did we say? If you like the show, go to Technorama. Go search for Technorama podcast. If you don't like the show, go search for This Week in Tech. Why am I not getting my show title on here? Contact us. There it is. 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you on the voice line. Haven't heard from many of you in a long, long time. Or drop us an email or a Facebook Messenger like Sweet Steve from London did with our Swedish word of the day. Thank you very much. 707-530-2428. Craig, give us a big binary high five and we're going to get out of here.
All right. 101, everybody.
Thanks. Stay safe. Take care. We'll talk to you real soon. Hit that last riff. Whee!
Excellent.